Hey listeners, welcome to this special end of year Spoil Sports podcast episode.
In this episode, we talk about Inside Out, Agent Carter, Rocket League, Mad Max Fury Road, Flash Season 1, and Bloodborne.
I'm Dermot.
And I'm Sean. If the name of the show hasn't given it away yet, there will be some spoilers ahead. So without further ado, here's the show.
This is your spoiler warning.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Spoil Sports podcast. This is our 2015 review. Just between myself and Dermot, we'll be talking about what we liked about our favourite game, TV shows and films individually. Dermot, how are you today?
I'm good.
It's the
looking forward to it.
It's the end of the year.
Yeah, it is.
2015's been pretty glorious.
It has been. Mostly on the games front, I think.
Ah, okay. I would say the same about probably on the film front of things, because we've had at least two Marvel films and we've had a handful.
That's every year.
Well, you've put me in my place. And we started off on talking about films just then. Let's jump straight into it. We've had an action-packed summer. I wanted to kind of open up with one of my favourite films being Mad Max Fury Road. We've covered this episode already in a previous episode with Andrew Edney, and I won't be trying to repeat myself, but you know, the reason why Fury Road stood out for me is because when I have an anticipation of a film, I kind of build it up, and it doesn't really work that well when it's a film that isn't meeting my expectations, but Fury Road kind of bettered it. And just from watching the trailers itself, it was quite a build-up of everything that was explosive, and it was crazy. I didn't think it would work in a film, and it did, and it was better. It was a road movie, so there was a lot of, you know, driving, just what I wanted. Not too much heavy on the dialogue front, which goes to show, like, one of my other favorite films, just in general, is Sucker Punch, and that doesn't really kind of require a lot of dialogue, really. It's just, you know, what you see in action-wise is just there in front of you. But Fury Road, it was quite awesome that it conveyed something better than what I thought it was going to be. You saw the film as well, as we know from our previous episode. What did you like about Fury Road in general?
I liked the fact that there wasn't that much dialogue in there. I liked the fact that all of the storytelling was done almost primarily through the camera and what you saw, and it was all done via the environment as well. You knew who Imperator Furiosa was, based on the fact that she was the one who was assigned to this massive war rig. You knew how important she was because of that. You knew the significance of it. You knew that they respected her based on how they talked to her and how they got signals from her and how she was able to make decisions and so on before she ended up going off course and whatnot. Things like that. The storyline was all told through just what you saw, and I liked that. Not many movies do that nowadays. Not many movies do that very well when they do try to. And I think George Miller deserves a lot of credit for that. I think he did a fantastic job, and I'm hopeful that he gets recognition sometime in January, whenever the Oscars are.
Yeah, it's probably one of those films that I would happily be alright if there wasn't a sequel per se to, you know, this Tom Hardy being Mad Max. I would happily kind of say, hey, this is what it is. It's standalone now, even though it's, you know, part of a series. And yeah, because I mean, the problem I would have is trying to better something on that scale, you just have to do it differently. An example which we haven't really covered before is the film of The Raid. I loved the first film, and it was action-packed throughout, and then the sequel, you know, it had to be different, and it went more down the story route, and, you know, the action was there. So for Fury Road, you know, that was what it was like there, and I don't want to think that it has to change and be different just to be different. I would like more of the same, but more of the same is in that film anyway, so, you know, it stands out as a great film. And the music was pretty cool.
It is good standalone. It's one of those tales from it really is Tales from the Wasteland instead of the Borderlands.
I see what you did there.
It does work. It does kind of go together quite well. Like, you could watch that movie on its own without any of the previous context, which I believe you did anyway, because you hadn't seen the previous movies.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Exactly. So you didn't lose anything because of that. So yeah, that's good.
But that, towards the end of the film, when you see Max kind of signing off and looking like he's going to go off to have another adventure, that's the only part that kind of intrigues me, to thinking, you know, he had such a bombastic time. What else could he, you know, have? And, you know, from that point onwards, we don't know what George Miller has up his sleeve. It would be a shame to see it be kind of handed over to someone else, because just hearing about the development from the original films, which he did, and then, you know, Fury Road, I would want it to kind of stick with this guy, just hearing that he's taken it from strength to strength. So, yeah, it can work on its own, but I'll be intrigued, but probably not excited, unless it's going to be better. And it's perfection for me, as it is. Now, Dermot, your favourite film of 2015 is...
Inside Out. It is an absolutely fantastic movie. Possibly Pixar's best. It is up there as one of their greatest achievements in terms of cinema. I think I'll actually be surprised come January, February. I keep forgetting when the Oscars are. I'd be very surprised if they're not nominated, if not win the thing, because they've just nailed it. The story of basically looking inside someone's head and seeing what's going on, and the way they represent that is so well done, and it's so clear, and anyone who watches it understands who the various characters are, what their purpose is, and there isn't all that much explanation as to... They tell you what everything is in the brain, but you understand how it works. You understand how the train of thought can kind of just roll around at any stage and just be there. You understand how long-term memory works, and how the fact that they have to throw stuff away to make room for more. You understand how the brain works, therefore you understand how the movie works without it having to explain it to you. Which means that when it gets to the story bit, you can concentrate fully on that, and Pixar, we know, are very good at doing that. So I really enjoyed that movie. I thought the visuals were fantastic, how they designed the movie. I thought the voice acting was terrific all the way throughout the movie. And yeah, I just really enjoyed it. What do you think?
I loved it. For anyone that doesn't know already, we also covered Inside Out earlier on in this podcast series with Darren Gargetz, and we spoke about how, you know, the human body, you know, we take it for granted that everything is melded together. We think with our own brains, but if you were to, you know, separate each of our emotions, you know, what would be the main core ones? And in the film, it portrays, you know, joy, sadness, and fear, and several others. And it was good to see that, you know, no one can basically live without having everything melded together. So, I mean, the main thing I took away from it when we recorded this beforehand and when we watched the film was, you know, the importance of sadness. It's something that we hopefully shouldn't have to force ourselves to go through, but without it, we aren't really a fully rounded, you know, human being. We can't always be joyful, because that would just be, you know, it'll be strange, and we wouldn't have a full view of what everything is around us in general. We need to have these full emotions in check, and just that bit towards the end of the film when, you know, sadness is allowed to, let's say, play with everyone else. It's interesting to see how you can have sorrowful moments, and it's not a bad thing to have as a human being. And it's good to see that if kids were to watch this film, if they do watch this film, and probably have watched this film, that it's nothing to be embarrassed about. And, you know, it's one of those moving films that Pixar happily does once again, and I was pretty moved by it. So, yeah, that was pretty cool. I would love to put some other films in that list. Is there anything else that, you know, probably you should give a nod to that could have or should have been also in a top three for us?
For me, Inside Out was definitely the king of the year, but there were other movies that I thought were really impressive. I really liked Ant-Man. I wasn't expecting much going into it, purely because it no longer had Edgar Wright in charge, and it delivered what it delivered, and I thought that was very, very well done. I also really enjoyed Ex Machina. I thought it was a brilliant directorial debut from Alex Garland. I really enjoyed the acting in it. Oscar Isaacs was excellent. Donald Gleeson was superb. I believe it was Alicia Vikander that was the android in it, and I thought her performance was outstanding. There were a number of movies this year. What did you think?
I would like to say my most anticipated film of 2015, and one I was looking forward to the most, would be Age of Ultron. Mostly because it's another Avengers film. Avengers, you know, the original was pretty spot on as one of my favourite films for the past few years. So naturally I would have think, oh, okay, there's another Avengers film. Let's get behind this. And then there was a slow reveal of the characters that were going to be in it. So it was great to see, you know, Vision and an actual Ultron in there, and returning characters such as, I'd love Hawkeye. Jeremy Renner is pretty cool. The reason that's not my top film of this year is because other films such as Ant-Man and my choice being Fury Road, it kind of was better than I expected it, whereas, you know, Avengers was exactly what I wanted it to be. Don't get me wrong, it's great. Whereas with the original Avengers film, we only went off the back of the previous Marvel films such as Thor, Iron Man, and we hadn't, this was the first Avengers film really, so that took me from nothing to a high point. And Age of Ultron was good. I loved it, but it didn't blow my socks off. It was exactly what I wanted. Let's move on to TV shows. TV has been, it's been quite a good year.
And it's been a very good year for Marvel. You were just talking about Age of Ultron and Ant-Man and so on. And Marvel were knocking it out of the park even from the start of the year. My pick of the year is Agent Carter. It is a superb take on that character. So what happened was, they released Captain America, the First Avenger. Everyone enjoyed that movie. But the biggest thing to come out of that movie was Agent Carter herself, played by Hayley Atwell. Everyone just loved that character. She was strong, independent, but she was just a really well-rounded, well-written person. And she was clearly very popular with the fan base. So obviously Marvel made the very intelligent decision, how about we keep that going? Obviously Captain America's story has now jumped forward in time, but you could still go back and find out what happened to Carter after those events. And that's basically what the TV show shows. She starts off basically going to work with the what was the precursor for S.H.I.E.L.D. And she bumps into Howard Stark, and he is just after being framed for some events that have gone on, basically. And Howard has to leave. And over the course of 8 episodes, they tell this really good story about how Agent Carter works with almost against her bosses, because they're so oppressive to her, and they basically think she should be the one making the coffee every day, and she isn't a valued part of that group. And she basically has to work against what will undoubtedly turn out to be Hydra based on the other events. And in terms of just those 8 episodes, you get all of the character arcs kind of done in that sense. You get introduced to Jarvis, who was Howard Stark's actual butler at the time, and that's probably where Tony got the idea. Played brilliantly. Let me get the name.
Is it not by Paul Bettany?
No, it's by James Darcy. I think he plays it as, you know, where Tony got the inspiration from, but it was an inspiration. He plays it very similar. He's very straight laced, and it's a really good show. If you haven't seen it, give it a watch. It's well worth it. It is only 8 episodes long, and season 2 is starting up in, I believe, January. So it's definitely worth picking up.
So I would have thought after season 1, that was just, you know, like you said, Captain America has moved on. So there's still that gap in between, you know, the end of season 1 of Agent Carter and everything that leads up until, you know, Captain America Winter Soldier, when she is in a hospital bed.
Yes, but you do know already, based on you saw Ant-Man, you do know that Carter is there the entire time at S.H.I.E.L.D. So her story goes on that entire gap. So they have loads of time to tell that particular story. So that series could go on for quite a long time. And if they keep up the quality, it could.
Cool. well, this is going to sound a bit strange. Not too strange, but it's another comic book related TV show. It's been a good year, like you said, for Marvel. I would have gone with another Marvel one here. Hear me out. But The Flash by DC was my favorite TV show of this year, mostly because I'm a big sucker for having your weekly new bad guy, and it was set up so perfectly to have a new bad guy with a new power every time. We covered this episode with Andrew Edney previously in the show, where we spoke about the different types of enemies that were around and how they got the powers. So if you don't remember, there was that explosion that Harrison Wells set off, and anyone that was caught in the blast had part of their, you know, their DNA tampered with. Some people directly got powers, some of it had it more dormant. And it was great to see a bit of humor as well in a TV show on the subject matter of, you know, superheroes and bad guys. Sometimes it can be too cheesy, but it was very good writing throughout all of season one. Season two currently is going ahead as we record this, and I can happily say that it doesn't kind of stray away from being as interesting as it should, and, you know, even more better that it's bringing more characters into it. It's pretty cool, and I know you enjoyed it yourself as well, Dermot.
I did. I think what you brought up was the villain of the week, and that can often be seen as a bad thing in a TV show, because it can mean that whatever happens in this hour or half hour, it's all going to be reset and we're going to be back to normal at the end of the show. What The Flash does really well is it has that villain of the week, it has that interesting power that it plays with. But throughout that entire arc, there is a story that goes through the entire season. And this particular one was really well done. I thought the reveal of Reverse Flash, that entire storyline, what happened to his mother, how his father is still incarcerated for her murder when he didn't do it, all of those kind of things kind of play together. And it's just a really good show written well. And that's... You sometimes get that where you have a good premise, but it's just poorly written. And that's basically what happened with Gotham Season 1. That was just terribly written. It's a decent premise, but they just couldn't get anyone interested in it because it was just not written very well. But Season 2, they've kind of messed that around a bit, and they seem to be doing better. But The Flash is consistent. It's just a really good story, well acted. Like, the characters in there are really good, and it's just an interesting universe that they've put us into.
And it ticks a lot of my requirements for everything geeky related. So you have your character of Cisco, who is your cool nerd. There is a variation of really cool superpowers, and it's comic books. You can't really go wrong with that. So, yeah, The Flash Season 1 was my favourite for 2015. Now it brings us on to our favourite game of the year. It's been a crazy year for games, as you mentioned
there
earlier.
There's been a lot of games.
It's been really good, inspirational for everything from AAA to, you know, small developments and even indie studio games. Everything's been really, really cool. And a lot of VR as well being setting up for 2016. It's going to be quite the year upcoming. But let's talk about this year's 2015's worth of games. We'll start with you, Dermot.
This was a year filled to the brim with AAA titles from the very start. I mean, me and you got sunk into Dying Light. We played The Witcher. We played Metal Gear when it came out. That was a huge deal. Fallout came out recently. But there was one game that from when it released to now, I've been playing consistently. And it's Rocket League. It is my game of the year. It's just... such a well-designed game. I mean, I keep going back to it. It's so well done. It's like popcorn for games. It's so easy to jump in and play. It's one of those games that I really appreciate because it's easy to jump into, difficult to master. So that's just me.
I'm loving the term popcorn for games. Could you elaborate a bit more? Because that sounds amazing. I want to use it in the right context.
It's basically just easy to digest. There isn't much there.
Okay, yeah, sorry.
There isn't much there. It's a very simple concept, what they have. They've built basically the same arena in multiple kind of areas. Like, it is the same thing over and over again. You've either 1v1, 2v2, or 3v3 games. They're only now starting to add additions to that, mutators to the game, different arenas. The first non-standard arena is coming out very soon, I think, or will have been out by the time this gets released. You have all of those elements being added into the game now, but even from the start, it was a very basic game, but just the gameplay that was involved and the fact that they released it for free or at no additional cost as part of the PlayStation Plus Instant Games Collection just means that everybody got to jump into it, and because of that, everybody got hooked, and it still has a huge player base across the PS4 and PC. Everybody we know plays it, and we play it regularly enough to know that everybody enjoys it. So I definitely think it's up there as one of the games of the year, and certainly my game of the year.
The DLC that you speak of, I loved how it was marketed, because that is very Mad Max Fury Road as well. So that's an instant like for me. But yeah, no, Rocket League is that game that you can't really consistently play for hours on end. It's one of your, you know, your go-to games when you want, you know, an hour with your friends, or, you know, tournament standards, to have something just to have in a party. And it's great. It's got local as well as multiplayer. It's, like you mentioned, it's got mutators now, which was recently added due to when we recorded this podcast. And the mutators, I mean, they're fun, but it's not that go-to back, that mode that you go back to, because it's, you know, it's the core foundation of the game that was solidly, you know, created. There was a lot of decal and, you know, body parts and tires that you can kind of tweak, and they keep adding more content like new antennas, and it plays really well. There isn't really anything wrong with it. Best of all, if you're on PC, you can play alongside other PC players. Not that you can kind of find them yourselves through matchmaking, it just happens to be random, but, you know, that, you know, crossover gameplay or across formats, you know, it's an instant like for someone like me who wants to play with more people out there, which is really cool. So yeah, Rocket League is a good choice, actually. I haven't realised how much of it I played until you mentioned it just then in the podcast.
Pretty much all of the time. All of the time.
So my game of the year, we happened to talk about in one of our other previous episodes featuring Luke Mears, which is Bloodborne. Now, the reason being, as mentioned before in the podcast, is I have no previous affiliation to any Miyazaki games. I played Dark Souls for about 2 hours, got out of the first mission, well, the prison, which most people kind of rather put a pad down. And I thought, okay, this game is cool. I wasn't really feeling the graphics at the time, but I knew it was there. Got it in a sale. And then they had the alpha on the PlayStation 4, and I saw it. It looked crazy. Didn't think too much about it until you picked it up yourself, Jeremy. And you were playing, you know, you were playing the first cycle of trying to get up to the cleric beast and trying to fight him just before you fight Father Gascoigne. And I think it's the fact that you kind of gave up, and I love a challenge, that made me want to come around and actually see what the fuss was that you were building up about this game. And me loving a challenge, I thought, okay, it's probably you just not doing something right. And I realized that I was getting my backside kicked in. I found out that it's nothing like how I would have thought it being, like Devil May Cry, for instance, where if an enemy's going to come after you, you probably attack them a bit quicker or you're trying to roll. But it's not about that, only that. It's about actually learning each of the enemy's kind of movements, learning how dying isn't a bad thing. It's just trial and error. And then the better players understand that dying isn't a bad thing. You just have to do something differently or be more patient. And I can happily say, after a few months of playing this game, I'm probably still not there yet. I don't think no one's a perfect player at this game. You have better players, but that's the good smart mechanics of what Miyazaki has, you know, had created for Bloodborne. At the time of recording this, myself and Dermot are playing through their first bit of DLC, The Old Hunters, that came out. And it just basically goes back into the world, but from more of a, I would like to say a dreamlike state, but it's probably more of a nightmare just fitting into the game there. And just, you know, reminding myself that, yes, it was a good game. Why was it a good game? Because as soon as I load up the DLC, I'm getting my backside handed to me. And there was quite a few difficult bosses from what I've seen and experienced so far.
And it reminded me why I quit in the first place.
But with perseverance, hopefully when this podcast goes out, we would have cleared it, probably with more help than that we need. The cool thing about the Old Hunters DLC is you can actually easily call more help, AI help. So in the original game, you could call Father Gascoigne in for just the first level to help you fight the Cleric Beast, but then you obviously fight Father Gascoigne as one of the bosses, so he's not going to be helping you anymore. But in a DLC, there's like, I think, three different people that can kind of help you out as AI, on top of if you're playing it cooperatively. And yes, Bloodborne is a co-op game, and that's probably why it is up there. I would not easily play this game by itself. I probably wouldn't happily play it by myself either, because it's quite creepy, as we discovered also in our Halloween special episode that we recorded with Chris Cleveland. It is quite freaky. There is jump scares in there, if you're not aware. And it's just a different world. You played it, obviously, whilst I was playing it with you. Do you remember some of the nightmares that you had from it?
All of the nightmares. I just had all of them. No, it was a really tough game, but playing it co-op certainly helped. And I do agree, it is one of the games of the year as well. It's up there. It's just such a good experience, gameplay-wise. Even story-wise, I thought they did a really good job of that as well.
It's one of those games that I like a good mechanic and fighting element of it, and I think the closest thing that could be up there is any Platinum titles. I love how their games play, and what Bloodborne is a good rival for that. It's you learn your playstyle, you find the right weapon that isn't just interchangeable, just a different harder weapon. You play differently. Not everything is perfectly, you know, balanced out. There is going to be some weapons that will suit you better than a heavier weapon, or vice versa. And the fact that the firearms in the game are only there to help you get a counter attack, which isn't the way that most people would play. They would think, okay, it's a firearm. My, you know, gaming knowledge should think that should take a lot of damage. It isn't there. It's not promoting that easy way out. And during the start of the game, I picked up the wooden shield, which is probably a bit of a tongue-in-cheek poke at what it was like for Dark Souls, where it was very shield defensive turtle play. And in Bloodborne, it works as a shield, but it eats all of your stamina. And I thought, hey, it can't be too bad. And everyone who had played a previous Miyazaki game laughed, in my face. It was quite bad.
All right, so that was Bloodborne. Really good choice. And that's 2015. 2016 is about to drop. What game, movie, and TV show do you think is going to be the top of your list next year?
Well, I would like to... I wanted to put The Force Awakens in there, but that would be out by the time this goes out. It would have to be for film. It would have to be a Marvel related film.
So Civil War or
I remember Deadpool. What the
next one is. Deadpool could be.
I think I would enjoy Deadpool more than Civil War, mostly because with Civil War I know the story, and it can't have everything required for the story from the comics for it to be up to my expectations. Whereas Deadpool is just going in fresh. And it's the idea that it's going to be an 18. It's Ryan Reynolds. You know, so far, that is great. But I have no expectations. It could be really, really good. And I would just think it's going to be, okay, I don't know what to expect from this.
Which TV show do you think is going to be on your list?
I'm not a huge TV show guy. I would like to think maybe Flash Season 2. Because I like Flash Season 1 so much. But then there's probably TV shows out there that haven't come out yet or been announced that I would jump on top of.
Okay.
How about yourself?
For me, film-wise, just to cover it, Batman vs. Superman is the one I'm anticipating most. It's probably going to end up just being good, because I don't think it's going to be bad, like really bad. I'm hoping it's much, much better. But it's one of those films that I hope is the one that defines this is what Marvel movies or DC movies are going to be like for the rest of, you know, the next few years at least. It's one of those cases where I really think that it's worth investing in. I think all of the parts that they've released so far, the trailer, the images we've seen, it all points to them getting it right. We just have to see what they deliver. In terms of TV show, similar to yourself, I do like The Flash Season 2 as well. But the season of TV that I am most interested in to see how it ends is actually Arrow Season 4 that's currently ongoing. I want to see if they deliver on that, because so far they've been very consistent, and we can kind of go from there. As for next year and what games we're likely to see, Uncharted 4 is the one that's where I'm pitching my tent. That's what I hope is going to be the best one there.
I really can't pinpoint what I'm looking forward to is in 2016, because 2015, like you said, we just came out of Fallout 4, Metal Gear Solid, The Phantom Pain, and these are the games that I've been most anticipating for the last couple of years. So it's gonna be a bit of a relaxed one for me to get into. I'm gonna start 2016 and just to see what, you know, what exactly is going to be coming out, because a lot of things get pushed, as we know, for good reasons, hopefully. So yeah, I'm trying to think back to like E3, and I just really want to play Shenmue. And that's probably not going to come out anytime soon.
Is Horizon not on your radar at all?
Yeah, it. I mean, they all are. I've learned to be a bit more subdued to game anticipation now, because I've been burnt numerous times in the past, and also games are expensive. So, you know, you've got to pick the ones that you are going to actually play for a bit. But for now, I'm pretty content with what I've got. I just really want to see, like I mentioned at the start of this podcast, how the VR does. That was going to be something that would hopefully blow my socks off, and hopefully in our home TVs and living rooms with our headsets on, if it's not too extortionately priced, because that would be the next step of gaming for me, and that is what 2016 is going to be in regards to games.
It's been a good 2015. 2016 looks like it could be really good as well. VR is going to be the main headline. We'll see how it goes.
So for everyone that has continued and listened to the entirety of this podcast, thank you. It's been a very good we started about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
So for anyone that has continuously been listening, thank you for just being there and participating. Hopefully we didn't spoil anything that you weren't ready for, but if you had, well, we do kind of give that spoiler warning for you. And yeah, hopefully we do a lot more for you guys in 2016. So thank you to my co-host Diarmid.
Thank you, Sean.
And we'll catch you soon.
Happy New Year.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Spoil Sports Podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please email us at spoilsportspodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at Sean Labode, and Diarmid is at Diarmid_S. If you like what you've heard, click the subscribe button, and we'll see you next time.